Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show, y'all!
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Zvakas.
And I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to AnCast. Welcome back to AnCast. Justin, you took a week off last week.
Much needed week off.
Had a little decompression time. That's good. Everybody needs that.
Much needed. Although I had to go to New York, which is basically where God decided to focus his magnifying glass between us and the sun.
It's pretty miserable out there right now, right?
Oh my God. You know, people are complaining how hot it is in LA. After coming back from there, this is nothing.
It's not that bad here. It really isn't. No. It's a little warm, but it's not anything. No.
Like it's 95 and, you know, with 95% humidity, and it's just you can't walk more than 5 feet outside without just sweating through every piece of clothing you own.
That's what I cannot handle the humidity. I think that's why I'm sort of allergic to the East Coast. I like to visit the East Coast, but I can't stay more than 3 or 4 days if it's humid because the humidity just makes me want to die. Like, it's so horrible.
It's just punishing. I mean, and there's nothing more embarrassing than having to go to a meeting, because I took a couple meetings while I was out there, and, you know, just walking in the door, just drenched.
Yeah, it's gross. So anyway, there's not a whole hell of a lot to talk about this week. We've got a big segment two coming up here, so we can make this pretty quick here up top. It's again, there's been almost no news lately. Super slow. Yeah,
it's the end of summer. Everyone's just kind of
on vacation.
Waiting.
Yeah,
on vacation or just waiting for the heat to subside.
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't really get around to watching anything of note. I popped in a couple of things. Nothing I responded to. I tried Black Blood Brothers on Blu-ray. Ooh, that's a mouthful. it's an upscale. Doesn't look great. Well, it looks fine for an upscale, but that show just didn't grab me. I think the character designs are stupid.
Wait, is that the one with the guy with the pointy hat?
Yeah, the red pointy hat and the cape. It's a silly-looking show. I just didn't respond to it. I was just like, whatever. And maybe it is like the, you know, end of summer bleh, that I just didn't respond to anything. Did you get around to watching anything?
I did. I tried to watch a couple things on the plane, but mostly failed. It had been years since I saw the Rurouni Kenshin Samurai X OVAs, so I'm like, I know, I'll rip those and throw them on my iPhone and I'll have something to watch on the plane. Made the horrible mistake of selecting the dub.
Whoops.
Oh my God, how did we ever find that acceptable?
I don't know. It's a long time ago at this point.
Yeah. So failing that, I ended up watching Loke the Superman, apparently, although it was never all that popular even in Japan, it was popular enough that it has a small fan following. It's a strange little franchise that started in the early 80s, and they've just made a short strings of OVAs ever since. There was like one movie and three short OVA series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, even though it kind of wrote the book on sci-fi, angsty, Esper throwings of chi battles, it's really, really compelling and actually very good. It's about an immortal, more or less superhero named Loke, who decides to keep himself a child because that way people will keep their expectations of him low. But inevitably, people seek him out to try to save things, and he always unfortunately gets involved and gets attached to people and ends up hating himself for it in the end.
This is not particularly available anywhere, is it?
No. I mean, you'd have to scour the internet for some fan subs, if that. But it's hard to find, but it's worth tracking down. It's if I was still writing Buried Treasure, it'd be a buried treasure. Although,
Didn't you do a buried treasure on it?
No, I didn't. I actually hadn't seen it yet.
Oh, well, maybe Mike will get to it at some point.
I hope he will. I know he's a fan. But actually, there was a U.S. release of the first two installments, but not good ones. They were those horrible dubbed in Hong Kong hack and slash just for kids VHS releases.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty heinous. I don't think anyone's first exposure to any show should be those. It's almost the definition of not giving it a fair shot.
Well, yeah. And anything else?
No.
No, that's it.
saw a couple live action movies, but I'll hold off on talking about those until they. One of them I'll hold off on talking about until it comes out in February. okay. But it's a decent, I think, teen angst version of Scott Pilgrim that I think people should check out.
Already comparing stuff to it.
Yep. Hey, you know what? It's been so long since we've had something visually inventive. You know, it's all we can reach for, right?
Yes, but we're not supposed to continue talking about Scott Pilgrim on this show. I put a ban on it last week because we just talked about it too much.
Hey, I wasn't there.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. The ban is still in effect. Speaking of actually live action stuff, this sort of dovetails into a little bit of news. I'm actually kind of excited to see Piranha 3D tomorrow. everything I've heard says it's a blast, and you know, I like schlock, so, and it's got a lot of comic actors in it that I really like. But the guy who directed it, the reason I mentioned that, just picked up the live action adaptation rights to Space Adventure Cobra, which is kind of a cool idea.
He is French.
Yes. So perhaps the film will be made more for a French audience. But I don't know. All this stuff always sounds like it could work to me because in my head they know what they're doing. But I'm not like a huge fan of Cobra, but if they made a campy space opera type thing, that could work.
Well, the nice thing about, first of all, I have my doubts that this will ever get off the ground because you know, there's not a whole lot of money kicking around these days, and hard sci-fi is almost unproducible right now.
Oh yeah,
unless it's Star Trek Reboot Part 2.
Well, okay. I don't know. I guess you wouldn't consider John Carter of Mars hard sci-fi, because it is. And that's getting made because of Avatar's success. And that's hard sci-fi, too. So I'm curious, like, where that's coming from.
Well,
it's hard to get anything produced, but I don't know.
I don't know. Cobra, I think if it does get produced, it has probably... It could suit Western audiences a lot better than most.
Yeah, well, there's probably like a 4% chance it'll resemble the source material in any way.
It doesn't take much. I mean, Cobra is basically just a guy with an arm with a gun on his arm.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I mean, I think it could work. I'm curious to see his directorial effort tomorrow and see how that goes. But I don't know.
Let us know if there's reason to fear.
Yeah, exactly. So other than that, before we get to our second segment here. So there was this article in the LA Times or LA Weekly, right? About the anime industry. So let's hear about that. What happened there?
Well, it's nothing new for those who have been following this sort of thing. It was more of the same bemoaning how Japan has outsourced so much fill-in work for so long that the young generation of horrifyingly underpaid artists who work, you know, 200-hour weeks, there's basically not enough of them, and the industry is dying. And actually, the one thing that was kind of new that I don't remember hearing elsewhere before is that the Japanese government is actually thinking about intervening at this point. Yeah, because the industry there is so broken that they're starting to more or less come to the conclusion that without the government stepping in, you know, trying to throw some more money at the problem or basically just boosting up the industry artificially, we're going to die.
Okay.
We've
been hearing that gloom prognostication for a while now.
Right, and it seems like things have gotten worse out of anything since, you know, the number of new productions have gotten halved since 2007.
Right, yeah.
But one interesting thing is that the fill-in animator they interview is a case study. I forget her last name. She's in our new Pierrot Studio Tour.
Very interesting. We're in that video. Yeah,
she's the one with the feather broom.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, and then through this article, we find out her backstory, that she quit her job at Tokyo Disneyland to pursue the dream, and she is one of a handful of in-house in-betweeners that work at Pierrot, and she's making $10,000 a year and living with her mother to make ends meet.
Well, that's what happens when you want to live the dream, when you start out.
Yeah.
Work a shit job for nothing, but you're in the industry.
Well, even the directors, you know, they're... I think we make more than them.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, again, it's no secret that, like, most of the anime industry is totally underpaid, unless you're a superstar, you know. And, like, superstar, there's, like, four guys who get paid. You'll get paid a decent living wage.
And one's Miyazaki.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting, but again, like you said, it's not really news to any of us.
No.
Been following this. I personally think if the government steps in and, you know, gives a little stimulus to the anime industry, that would be a good thing. I don't see how that would really be a problem. It is an important export for them. You know,
it's an important export and it's important culturally because, you know, honestly, you know, although sushi played a large part of it, it was basically in the 90s, it was sushi and anime that made Japan less scary to whiteies.
Right. It made it cool for a short period of time.
Right. It's hard for me to remember that.
Very briefly when it was cool.
Right.
But speaking of that Piero video, that's a big deal. So we had that go up this week and it's really cool and people are really responding to it.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it, and kind of ashamed, too, because it took me 18 months to finish it.
Yeah, there's a reason for that, though, right?
Yeah, it's really, really hard to make those things, and I should have cranked that out faster. I mean, that's a total failing on my part. Not that I wasn't busy doing other things, clearly.
Right.
But, it's really, really hard to edit people talking, especially older people talking in interviews, because they tend to mumble.
Right.
When it's not your native language.
Yeah. Now, so we've got some others, right, in the pipe?
We got two more that are already shot and done. Like, literally, they're done. I'm just waiting for the studio to sign off on them. And, you know, we produce these with the studio giving us, you know, full access and, you know, guiding us around. And they bend over backwards when we do this. So we obviously want to be nice and tell them, hey, is there anything in here we screwed up? Is there anything that, you know, you don't want us to show? And they're like, yeah, could you please take out that extreme close-up of our CEO's nostril?
Yeah. Right,
which did happen, by the way. and, you know, they're also like silly camera tricks that our camera guy wanted to try and they just didn't work. And they're like, yeah, could you take that out? You're trying to make him look superhuman. And he's like normal.
Interesting. Well, there's obviously no, we don't know when those will be available.
Well, we also want to make them last a little while.
Yeah, you got to spread the stuff out.
Right. So we have the next one is with Satellite. Which people know from Across Frontier and Basquash and a couple others. And that one is really, really cool because all I'll say is that Shoji Kawamori designs his mecha with Legos.
Oh, yeah. No, I think I've seen parts of that. And it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, so that's pretty nifty. And then we have a short one with Madhouse. Unfortunately, we visited Madhouse during a crunch time, so they weren't able to show us a lot. Mm-hmm. But they did show us part of the process that no one else has showed us yet, which is, you know, the final assembly of all the cuts and how they tweak it in editing.
Cool.
So
people can look forward to
that. Yeah, that one actually has a companion interview with their COO, which is pretty insightful.
Oh, a brief update. Brian Ruh's column, which I announced months ago, is finally launching this month. We're getting the final banner colors in. It'll be ready to go. Apologies for the delay on that. But
I forgot about that.
Yeah, well, we wanted a nice banner. And it just, the summertime is the worst time in the world for anything to get done that's not convention coverage and spring preview or summer preview. So it just kind of got put on the back burner. But it's, it will likely launch. It'll launch when I get the banner, and which should be any day now. So people can look forward to that. Anyway, with that, we should move on to our next segment because this is going to be a good one, I think.
Young and I have some unfinished business. I will finish it.
He has no gun. No fear.
Are you faster than a speeding bullet?
No equal.
No problem.
In his explosive motion picture debut, Jeff Speakman is the perfect weapon.
Okay, joining us this week is our favorite returning champions, Daryl Surratt from the Anime World Order podcast and Otaku USA, and Mike Toole from the Mike Toole Show and Otaku USA. Hey, guys.
Hey. Hey, what's up?
So the goal this week, because there's no hot topics out there or anything. Well, there's one sort of hot topic that sort of inspired a larger discussion. The goal this week is to solve some problems, to squash some beefs in anime fandom, which I think you could, I think it's fair to say, anime fandom is pretty fractured. It's pretty fractured. A lot of fighting, a lot of yelling at each other, I think. And so it sort of came to a head this week when the author of Black Butler, the sort of Fujoshi bait manga, she said basically, I got some really disturbing emails from people who are reading bootleg copies of my material thanking me for making it, but saying they basically stole it. Hey, could you guys stop stealing my shit? And the fan response, which at this point is fairly predictable, is fuck you. That was pretty much the fan response. And this sort of led me to thinking, wow, anime fandom has some problems in it right now. And so I invited you guys on to squash these beefs and solve these problems. And it was suggested to me via email that I am attempting to assemble some sort of Justice League here. If that's the case, I call Aquaman.
I call Guy Gardner Green Lantern.
Right.
That was going to be my pick. I guess I'll settle for Booster Gold.
I just hope we end up a better video game than Justice League usually has.
Well, that leaves Wonder Woman as Justin. So, yeah. So I kind of want to start there with this response. Did you guys see this? What was your reaction to it? Do you think this is totally typical now? And what the hell is going on?
I did see the thread. It was massive. I think it went like almost 30 pages worth of people being pretty darn upset. And it is expected. It's pretty much every single time the topic of fan subs, piracy, scanlation, whatever you want to call them, comes up, this is the inevitable discussion that gets triggered anywhere.
Yep.
Not just the Anime News Network. It's not an anomaly. This is the culture right now, where you've got one substantially large group of people saying exactly what you just said, the screw you, we are, you know, giving you free publicity, we should be able to download things, the creators are, you know, entitled to give us stuff. And then you've got another set of people saying, hey, wait a second, you're crazy and you have no idea what you're talking about, and neither shall the twain meet.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, from my point of view, I spent years having this argument every single day, and I got so tired of it. I mean, eventually I'm aware that this this little controversy happened, but really I didn't seek out that much reaction to it because, as you said, I could predict exactly what was going to be said by who. Is that, you know, you were going to have a large crowd of people who just they don't really have it in their heads that the creators of this stuff are entitled to make a living. So they were going to claim that no, information should be free, and by free I should get free comics. And then there, you know, you would have the champions on the other side who would very officiously point out, no, you should be paying for everything.
You know, I have a theory, and this occurred to me, you know, because I was reading the thread while on vacation, so I was very proactively not caring about it. People, a large percentage of media consumers, don't have any respect for creators on a very deep level. There's a resentment there that the very fact that these people are getting paid to do something that maybe in their heart of hearts they dream of doing and aren't getting to do, or that they're frustrated that they can't do, that almost lends itself to just a wholesale resentment of the people who are practicing their art. And you see this in every aspect of fandom interacting with the creative staff. You see it in panels with directors where people are raising their hands and going, I didn't like the ending. Could you make a new one? You see it in voice actor panels where the only question anyone really cares about is, how do I get to be a voice actor?
Which is also the only question asked towards directors. Hey, can you get me a job in Japan?
Right. Exactly. And you see it in
endless
pitches that, you know, we get for horrible anime series that are obviously made by non-creative 15-year-olds.
Yeah, and Justin, I should point out that this attitude extends even beyond the realm of actually creating anime. There are an awful lot of people out there who resent you and Zach for daring to make a living doing what you do.
Oh, I know.
We're quite aware.
I brush it off. I just brush it off. I mean, I can't do anything but brush it off. If I let that get to me, it's the worst. But no, I actually agree with you.
I enjoy that, actually.
I agree with you. I think it's more subconscious. I think it is. It's fairly subconscious. It has to be. Because if somebody realized, wow, why am I so hateful towards the people who create this product that I claim to love? Why am I like this? Why am I behaving like this? I think if people stopped for a minute and thought about it, they wouldn't have those reactions. So it must be a sort of happening on kind of a subconscious level, this resentment towards creative people who make a living or are successful and make a living in creative professions. And that's really sad. But at the same time, I have no idea what you could possibly do about that except confront those people and say, why do you feel this way? This person creates something that brings you joy. Why are you so angry at them?
I get the feeling that in addition to that, somewhere underlying all that is a general undercurrent of basically no concept of intellectual property.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that goes without saying.
Right. But I think it's born out of that. You know, once you get the option that, you know, everything is out there on the internet or can be freely procured one way or the other, you kind of, these things don't have value, you know, to say the older generation, blah, 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 you know, you had to either invest time or money, which, you know, these are both finite resources. Nowadays, it doesn't require either. Things are relatively instantly available for pretty much any form of entertainment you can imagine. And with that iterated over, it's been a decade now. People no longer treasure it. And so eventually it gets to the point where it's like, well, why do I even care about that side of things?
I'm not convinced that's the source so much as the result. And the reason
there's no one source.
Well, the reason I don't think that's the reason behind the mindset is because if that were true, there wouldn't be the insane emotion behind it.
It's very – the emotions are really, really hot.
Yeah.
It's like
– a lot of these folks just lash out incredibly violently when you call them on the behavior.
Yeah, well, so, because it's cognitive dissonance. They don't want to be called on it. They know what they're doing is not right. You know, they have to know that somewhere. Maybe they don't.
And, I mean, also, it's a complicated problem, guys. I mean, do any of you ever pirate any media these days, even now?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I sure do. I mean, I can
just
say that
took
the bulk...
18 months to edit a studio tour.
I mean, the thing is, the bulk of the things I grab are that have been out of print for years, possibly decades, but, you know, this is not something I don't do. I can't really claim to be holier than thou about it. I just think that in a lot of cases it's gotten so egregious and just so strange.
Well, it's very important to point out we are not talking about black and white morality here. That's not the point. None of us have the attitude that we're better than someone that pirates things. I'm a grown man. I make a good living. I only pirate something I can't buy. If I literally cannot buy it,
it's impossible.
That's my rule as well.
You know, that's it. Everything else I pay for. And then that's because I want to support the people who make the things that I love. Like somebody ripped the soundtrack to the Scott Pilgrim game, which I've been really looking forward to, but it comes out on iTunes next week. So I said, okay, I will wait until it's on iTunes and I will pay Anamanaguchi for this music because I liked it.
Ooh, I did not know that.
And so that's my attitude. And that's not necessarily like I never pirated or I've never pirated. On some level, I sympathize with these kids. I was once a broke teenager who couldn't afford anything and pirated a whole bunch of shit. I mean, I do sympathize. But at the same time, I was never militant about it. And I would never go up to a creator who said, hey, could you not steal my stuff and say, hey, buddy, fuck off. Like, I would never do that. I
try to think about this from the perspective of a violently unhappy 15-year-old, which I was once. And my point of view on this is, you know, anime, in that point of my life, anime was my escape from a shitty, shitty life. And I would kind of want to be, I mean, I would relate to that world so much that I would just kind of want to lose myself in it as much as possible. So maybe it's kind of about someone else claiming proprietary over a world that you've kind of just mentally put your own personal mark on.
You know, that actually makes a lot of sense when you sort of apply that to other activities that have taken place regarding people's violent, visceral responses to other things related to, you know, plot developments in a show or something. If you say, you know, for example, I don't think that it makes a whole lot of sense to generate this level of, you know, pornographic material for, you know, so-and-so character, you'll get a ton of, like, really impassioned, angry responses. And you might be right about that. That could be people saying, hey, in this way, this is how I interact with this creation. I choose not to worship the creator, but the creation itself, and I want to put my stamp on it. And anyone who impedes that in any form is the enemy.
Yeah, there's a sense of ownership, of personal ownership.
That also explains otaku ken.
Oh yeah! Oh god! Let's not get into that.
Like, oh dear!
And here's an interesting illustration of that in action. You've noticed easily that fans don't necessarily care if a creator tells them, "Hey, stop stealing my crap." But if someone swipes somebody's AMV, or if someone swipes somebody's fan sub, that's when they'll come down on them. Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's a huge part of it. Most of these people either have never thought about it or can't fathom the concept of creating something and having it taken from you without your permission, because they've never attempted or never really put anything out there that they considered representative of them. It's a rare thing. Like, not everybody, certainly people are not encouraged to go into the arts, by their parents. It's not artistic and creative professions are, you know, they have sort of a stigma among, you know, kids going to college are encouraged to go into science and business, and artistic professions are seen as a waste of time. And so you have a whole lot of people that don't even think about creating things. Don't even think about creating entertainment for people. And so,
or if they do think about it, they think, well, that's easy.
Yeah, they think that it's easy. Even though it's incredibly fucking difficult. You know, people who work in movies, their whole life is work. They don't, you know, they barely have families. I think arts professions have been devalued and talked down to where people think, well, you get to make comics for a living, so why should I care about anything that you need or want, any of your needs? You're already living the dream. And you must be a millionaire because you make comics, which is totally not the case, ever.
To some extent, I blame the star system for that. You know, when I tell people, even people who are who aren't all that far removed from the entertainment scene, I tell people about, you know, things like, you know, the lifestyle of blue-collar Hollywood, which is most of Hollywood. Most people here, you know, barely scrape by a living. And it blows their minds. Blue collar Hollywood, such a thing exists? I'm like, well, most actors can barely pay their rent, even if you see them on TV. They don't. That is just such a huge leap for them. To the vast majority of the public, the glamorous professions are, you know, the ones where you're having dinner at the Rainbow Room with Woody and Mia.
Yeah, that's a nice reference.
even someone as widely liked as Vic Mignogna, to pick a name out of a hat, is he's only reached a point where he's barely, you know, making enough money from his artistic endeavors to be able to do them full time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, voice acting. Right. You want to look at destitution? Not necessarily destitution, but not being able to support yourself full time with your creative profession, let's look at voice actors.
Well,
right. I think the best analogy often given, or the best bit of wisdom often imparted, is that you make more money working your minimum wage job at McDonald's than most voice actors make just on voice acting, because it's not like a very lucrative career for most people. And that's just, you know, voice acting is just one facet of this whole thing, whether it's being an artist or being a, you know, actor. These people are usually, it's not like something you can quickly monetize, and it's like, okay, I'm an actor and now I'm making that Kath Soucy money. It's only a very select few people who can be actors full time or be artists full time, such that, you know, if you want these people to still have time to make their creations, you need to support their output if you like it.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a big kind of shock there, because a lot of the people who do get upset, I think, genuinely have never thought about it from the artist's point of view, simply because they're not capable of thinking about it from the artist's point of view.
Or they don't want to. Or they just don't want
to. You try to point out the they're failing in pirating something that is new and vital and interesting, and they come back at you with a car metaphor.
Yeah, the car metaphor I hate that. And actually, I sort of wanted to move into the other big thing about this. I think and I've always said this about the anime industry. The anime industry sort of, as I've observed it, is kind of a petri dish for the entertainment industry. Everything goes wrong in anime first, and then you see it start happening to Hollywood. So, like, the shrinking DVD market, you know, the workforce being eroded by the recession. You know, just really bad things happen in the anime industry first.
Have you seen the LA Times article?
Yeah, we actually just talked about that in the first segment. But what I wanted to say is that in the entertainment world, people still put a dollar value on entertainment. Tentpole blockbuster movies and video games both have dollar value in the minds of teenagers, in the minds of adults. People will pay for those things. But I think anime and manga have both become so utterly devalued by piracy on the internet that feeds into this mindset. But you make something that's free. You're a mangaka. You make something that's free. You don't make something I pay for. And so that's really ingrained. Like, that's really a deep-seated belief that a lot of people have. Anime equals free in the minds of a lot of these people. And so that's why they lash out.
It comes down to ease of access. It's if you could easily pirate video games, if you could easily get, you know, perfect quality copies of Hollywood tentpole blockbusters as they come out, like, that day, if not before, I think you'd see a similar devaluation. But those, usually there's a time involvement. Like, you'd have to wait. And people don't like to wait. People want things, you know, ASAP. So given the choice where it's like, oh, okay, well, it's out now in the theater and I can't really get a good copy of it, okay, I'll go see it. The video game, right, it's not going to be cheap for a while. Or, you know, you can't mod your system necessarily. Okay, I'll buy that game. Anime, there is no roadblock. Manga, right, there is no roadblock.
Plus, with the tentpole blockbusters, there's a whole social social pressure aspect to it where, you know, we really need to see, say, Iron Man 2 the weekend it comes out, because that's what everyone's going to be talking about. And if we don't see it, we'll be left behind.
Yeah, and all my friends are going to go, and I don't want to see it before they do, and we all want to see it together. Yeah, I mean, like Daryl said, there's roadblocks in place to prevent these things from becoming too devalued. We can point to one example in video games, though, where piracy was blamed, and probably very easily blamed on the failure of this console, was the Dreamcast. Which, when we were in college, we pirated the fuck out of Dreamcast games.
Absolutely. I didn't buy my Dreamcast until I could steal all the games for it. Because I had no money.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Did you
know that? I bought every single game. I never pirated a single Dreamcast game.
No, when we were in college, man, pirated Dreamcast games. I had a Japanese one and a U.S. one. We would just pirate the shit.
I just had a U.S. one, and I guess at the time, the piracy was good enough that you could play the Japanese ones without any additional work. And at that point, it was like, okay, open for business. And, you know, what? Who cares? The PlayStation 2 is coming out soon anyway. This console's dead.
Yeah.
And yeah, that killed that system, though.
If Dreamcast style piracy were as easy on the Xbox 360 as it was then, I guarantee you the 360 would be the beaten stepchild of the console world.
And absolutely.
So, and so that you can point to anime. Anime is the Dreamcast of entertainment.
how did you guys acquire your pirated games? Because bandwidth back then wasn't what it is now.
Well, downloading them off the internet via slower broadband than what we've got now.
Yeah, college broadband. Okay. And then one person gets a game and everyone has it immediately after. So I get it off Usenet. I burn it. I give it out to everybody, all my friends who have Dreamcast, because the games are free. You know, that's how that worked. Especially in a college environment, everybody in a dorm room will have a free game the minute it comes out on Usenet. And that's how that happens. And the same thing happens, that exact same thing happens with anime.
I loved that console.
It's your console, too.
It is. I don't have Shenmue 3.
Shenmue 3. Anyway, so that's a big deal. And do you think there's any way to combat that sense of anime is not free? Like, is it too late? Is it done?
It might be too late, because the more I look back, even going back to the beginning of American anime fandom, this whole thing was kind of built on some level of intellectual property theft, some level of copying and distributing things to your friends, because there wasn't an industry set up yet. Then as the industry was set up, it sort of arose from that fan circle level, people who were previously fans going pro, as it were. And we even are seeing this now in the online realms. And so the mentality is always there in the back of your head at some level to somehow turn around and say, okay, now stop doing that. it's hard. It's almost like the barn door has been open for years now, and trying to close it is either pointless or virtually impossible.
I would argue that we're actually on the upswing, that things are getting better.
With the simulcasting, sure. I think it's better in that sense. That's great. I love that.
Have you looked at the numbers, though?
I have not looked at the numbers because I don't know where to see the numbers.
Okay. Well, just in a broad sense, the numbers before Crunchyroll started streaming Naruto, that was really the big watershed moment. Before Crunchyroll started streaming Naruto, we were seeing BitTorrents of a mildly popular show getting about 50 to 80,000 BitTorrent downloads per episode.
Okay, that tracker stuff I can't see. Streaming stuff, I have no idea.
Streaming stuff is getting that now. And the BitTorrent numbers, in the meantime, have cratered. There are most shows don't really get more than about 10,000 downloads now.
That makes sense. It comes down to ease of access. At the end of the day, the high-quality streaming is easier than the BitTorrent stuff. You can just go click and you see it. Whereas with BitTorrent, you've got to have a client, you've got to know where the things are, you have to get it, download the thing, which, you know, requires hard drive space, etc. It's less instant, it's less immediate. Whereas the streaming, it's a good solution. I don't know if the money is there yet, but, you know, it's a better solution.
I can tell you right now it's not.
Well, that's a systemic problem with the internet, I think. I think advertising and revenue creation online in general isn't where it ought to be yet.
No. No, it is not.
And it's even worse overseas. Like, I was looking at doing stuff for UK and Australia, and there's just no money to be had. I mean, there's a little bit here and there, but it's just not anywhere near what it is in the States.
It's really beginning to bother me that print magazine advertisements still command such higher prices than online advertisements, when in a lot of cases the online ad is going to get a lot more exposure.
Right. It's like, that's common knowledge. Everyone knows that print's on the decline and everyone's going to online, but the prices and the ad rates have not migrated similarly.
Yeah, it's the concept that print is more valuable than online in terms of eyeballs just has to die.
Yeah,
it might take a generation to die out.
Yeah.
It might. I mean, I guess it's the sense of permanence, the sense of, okay.
Yeah, the persistence.
Right. The print thing, people will perhaps be more likely to read it or reread it or, you know, go back to it. Whereas website stuff, you've got to update constantly to get people coming back. People aren't going to be right.
Yeah.
Precisely.
So getting back to the notion of the fractured fandom, in terms of this particular subject of, you know, respecting the artist and paying for what you enjoy, I have to wonder, we talked about how sort of generationally there's a crowd of people now for whom anime has always been free. Anime will always be free. They will never pay a dime for it. And I was thinking about this the other day. I think the notion that somehow these people are providing some kind of promotional value, I think that's a dead idea. I don't think that's true anymore. And I think there's a lot of vocal people out there who aren't really fans of anime. They consume it because it's free and it's easy and their friends talk about it. But if it wasn't,
they'd move on to something else.
If it were to go away tomorrow, they would not care. And I got to tell you, like, if we got rid of all those people and some, you know, 500 of them stayed behind and decided they liked it enough to pay for it, are we losing any value? Are we losing anything by getting these people out of the system?
What we are losing is tickets to conventions. We're losing attendance at live event kind of things. And as such, you're not going to see a push to get rid of that crowd at the fan event level. So there's that, and that's a real issue that, you know, a ticket sold is a ticket sold, regardless of what people think.
Yeah.
But as far as the culture, we're probably not going to lose anything if a lot of people who are just getting anime because, hey, here it is, I can get it easily, okay, I'll watch this because time is infinite. You know, if those people were to disappear, I think the world would keep going. When I say the world, I mean, like, you know, anime fan culture would keep going without you know, much negative impact.
Well, one of the reasons I pose the question is because a lot of the comments in the thread, these people, they threaten to not watch or download. They threaten not to download stuff anymore. They threaten, well, I'm just not going to read your comics anymore.
Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It's such a weird notion, and I'm wondering.
Well, it's like when you have a disruptive customer in a retail store, and you have to get them out of there, and they're like, "Well, I'm never shopping here again." It's just like, "Oh, well, wow, thank you."
Yeah, I get that sometimes on the website when we publish a column someone doesn't like, and they post some bullshit reason why they didn't like it. I'm never reading this again. All right, I'm not going to notice.
Well, you know, casual fans, and there aren't enough of them, do maybe not these casual fans, but casual fans in general serve a very, very necessary purpose, and that's to make the numbers big enough so you can make anime.
Right.
The lack of them, they used to buy stuff and they don't anymore, and the lack of them is what's causing all the pain and misery.
Right, right. But I think we can draw a very distinct, like, I think now you can point to a very distinct separation between somebody who has potential value for the industry, somebody who has potential support for the industry, and a crowd that is basically following a political ideology at this point that you do not pay for anime. I really do think it's almost become political. The way these people argue, it's very rigid ideologically.
How many of those are there really, though?
Well, I'm not saying there's a ton of them, but we certainly...
But they sure post on the internet a lot,
yes,
to make it seem like they must be an army.
Yeah, they're very
vocal.
Yeah,
sure. Those people, put them in a gas chamber, sure.
Right, and I'm just... But at the same time, there's also this notion, well, we don't want to make them all go away. We got to keep those people around because they're providing some vague, ethereal, promotional value. That just by watching this stuff, they're providing us with a service.
Here's another conundrum. You go to a convention, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Daryl and I were at Otakon, and I still go to something that, you know, a big event like that draws 28,000 people. Those folks still pile into the dealer's room and buy a shit ton of anime-related merchandise. Maybe not quite as many DVDs as they did 10 years ago, but they're still buying DVDs, and they're still buying all kinds of other stuff.
Right.
Right. So, they still buy... manga to some extent. It's not quite as much as it was. They really, really want to buy character goods. They really want wall scrolls, figurines, you know, tangible physical objects. That
and a lot of people, and I count myself among them, I don't know if this is a proud statement I make, but an awful lot of people are willing to buy those DVDs if they can get them for around $10 or less.
Yeah, they're searching for the good deals.
Yeah.
But I mean,
oh yeah, I'm always looking at the cheap bin.
So I guess the problem, part of the problem here is you're never really going to know if the guy bitching at an artist for daring to say, don't pirate my stuff, is the sort of person who has put a single penny into the anime industry. You never,
yeah, right, yeah. It's impossible to tell. And there's a price point that could vary from person to person. It's like, what's like the minimum that I would charge you that you'd still be willing to pay for music? You know, Apple struck the jackpot when they found out people will buy your songs if you price them for a dollar.
Right.
But for anime, even if you were to price per episode a dollar, I still think that'd be like, oh, it's too much money. A dollar.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. A dollar per episode. Because that notion that it's not worth anything is just so ingrained. It's so ingrained.
Also, you have to consider that a song is something a person will listen to again and again. An anime episode, with few exceptions, is probably only going to be watched once.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not even like American TV where people will buy a box set of like 30 Rock and watch it, you know, once every 2 years or something like that. I don't think people revisit anime unless they really loved it.
It's more like the box set of Small Wonder.
where you only watch it when you're really drunk.
Right.
The flood of TV on DVD that eventually sort of caused that whole thing to cave in was precisely that which Justin speaks of, you know, the substandard product. And I think that even ties into anime. People are really just living in the present for anime because it's good enough what's getting made. It's not like something that you'd go back to 5 years from now and say, oh yeah, I'm really gonna watch this again. Therefore, you know, they don't see the need to buy a DVD set and have it permanently because it's like, oh whatever, it's just something that's on. It's
even with Japan's Even though Japan's output halved over the last few years, there is still way too much product out there.
Way too much.
Yeah, yeah. And there are too many shows that by any reasonable measure of quality are just not very good.
You know, compare this to the late 80s, early 90s. You might have had a lot more titles at any given time, but the majority of those titles were one-shot OVAs or movies. You know, they weren't very long. They weren't 13 to 26 episode TV series that went on forever. And it's those that tend to really show their age the most.
Right. You know, they, and that's actually, you know, sort of dovetailing away from the fandom part and industry. But there is an overlap that you kind of have to acknowledge, you know, when having either discussion. And I definitely do think lack of accessibility helped create the fandom that we've got now. And by lack of accessibility, I mean, in the late 80s, early 90s, we had tons of things that were like short OAVs, one-shots, films, things that people could just say, hey, here, watch this. Nowadays, the majority of things being made require some sort of time commitment, 13 episodes, 26 episodes. In 2010, it's a bad time to become a fan of One Piece. It's like, okay, go back to episode one. What are you on now? 400-something.
You know? In my formative years as a fan, I was not lusting after the, you know, 30 tapes it would take to get all of Maison Ikkoku. I was lusting after the high quality Super VHS mastered fan sub of Nausicaa.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a salient point. I mean, I have a number of friends who were into anime at one point and kind of fell off the wagon, but now one thing that they have seen and has tremendously excited them is the trailer for Blend. That's, you know, they look at that and they're just like, okay, this is the kind of thing I wanted to see when I got into anime.
You actually dropped a bit there. Trailer for what?
Redline.
Redline. Okay, yeah. I'm excited about that too. okay, before we sort of move on, I wanted to know, is there a way to educate these people about what really the life of an artist is? Do you think that would help if they knew, look, this is basically a blue-collar job. It's not this big glamorous thing. Where it's okay for you to tell them to fuck off because you just assume that they're millionaires that don't need your money. Is there any way to educate?
On some level, people already know. It's no secret that all these top-level manga artists and so on and so forth are killing themselves with trying to meet deadlines. People just assume that, oh, okay, whatever. You know, they know it's in one ear and out the other. Like, they just know that, but they don't really know the implication of it. So it's hard to really sell people on this idea that, say, you know, the artist of Black Butler, popular as the show may be, even though you can buy T-shirts at Hot Topic with Black Butler on it, is not, you know, rolling in the Scrooge McDuck vault of infinite money.
Right.
And so it's a weird problem that I'm not really sure, like, you can tell people, but it's just like a teacher in a high school telling, you know, students, like, hey, don't be a jerk. And everyone's like, yeah, sure, mister, whatever, we get you. And then, you know, they just keep going. I don't know if it's a maturity thing, because I know people in their 20s who do this.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't mean they're mature.
Yeah. Well, that actually points to some other things, because there have been interviews with low-level animators and mangaka, or mid-level, or, you know, even people who you'd consider successful, where they actually break down how much they actually get back from every dollar you spend on a manga volume. And so that raises the justification. Well, it all goes to the evil corporation, because every corporation is evil, as we know.
Right.
So I'm not going to pay for it anyway, because the money doesn't really go back to the artist. It just goes to the corporate fat cats that pay all the production costs. And,
wow. And that's horrible, because manga artists, their breadbasket is tankobon. They make more money on average from sales of those than from phone books, than from, you know, the initial submissions, than anything.
Yeah, and what also drives me nuts is the notion, well, the artist is just doing it for love of the art. They don't care about the money, so I don't have to pay. That is, to me, a complete bullshit. I can't believe it. Manga's
I don't know about you guys. I love what I do, but if it didn't pay for my living expenses, I would find something else to do.
Yeah, right, exactly. They may love their job, but that's not a reason why they shouldn't be paid.
Right. I think, Zach, it's born out of the notion that, like you said, the creative arts and majors and such like that aren't easily monetizable, such that most people who do them go into them against the will, so to speak, of their parents. It's like, oh, you'll never get a job doing that, with the implication being, okay, they go and they major in it for the love of their craft, and therefore that love of their craft must extend universally without condition for everything they ever make.
Yeah.
All right, I got to jump in here. I am utterly uninterested in educating people, because I think everyone already knows if they care to know. I think what the real problem is here is we have a fandom that feels disengaged from the process, from the actual making of it. They don't care about the creators, and no factoid that we fling at them is going to make them care. And that's the long and short of it. If we're really going to make these people care about what goes on and what their dollar goes towards, then in some way we have to talk about opening them up to the process. And maybe that even means having some sort of talent competition where some aspiring manga artist or writer from the States actually does get to have a new show made by Pierrot or made by Madhouse or something.
You know, that's an interesting notion, and I think there's a good parallel here in terms of the fashion industry in the United States. Before the glut of fashion reality shows where they show you how much hard work and effort and toil it takes to come up with, say, a line of spring dresses, I don't think people thought the fashion industry was a place where people worked hard, or a place that was difficult to get into, or a place where you had to be intensely driven and talented in order to get into it. And now that we have all these popular reality shows that show the toil of, you know, working in these industries, as vapid as many of them are, now you see a whole group of people who are incredibly driven and going to fashion school and really want to be a fashion designer, and they know how much hard work it is, and they don't discount things.
We have the same thing with chefs.
Exactly, with chefs. Yes, yep, exactly. Yep. So maybe we need a reality show. You know, America's Next Top Underpaid Animator.
Oh, God, help us. But something in that vein. I struggled to hear myself
hosted
say
by
maybe
Mike
we need
Jitlov.
Another reality show.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, there's a name I never thought would come up on AnCast.
Yeah, I know. Well, Mike Jitlov has problems beyond finding work, but yeah.
Yes, to say the least.
Actually, don't know who that is.
He is an incredibly, incredibly talented independent filmmaker and practical special effects whiz. His problem is that he's also notoriously unbelievably difficult to work with. He's one of those, you know, absolute my way or the highway guys. He created just an astonishing little film that he funded entirely by himself called Wizard of Speed and Time back in the early 80s. But the thing is, he was so kind of rigid and unwilling to work in the Hollywood system or with other folks in the entertainment business that he could never really make something out of that opportunity that came from making the film. Like he was one of the special effects guys in Ghost. Like you remember when the bad guys would die and like the evil spirits would rise up and grab them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He came up with that. That was his thing. Huh. But that was like his only real big Hollywood job.
Right. Right. So, I mean, well, that's very interesting, but, I don't know. I think that might work. Some kind of reality show that focuses on even like a comics show where you just show people how much fucking work it is to produce a comic book.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Or do you think connecting the fans with the creators is something that can be done? I mean, people don't seem to give a shit at anime conventions, that's for sure.
Well, no, you know, not for the Japanese talent, but they do. Go ahead.
I think it can't hurt. And I think it can't hurt just because, you know, Daryl, you and I have sat on panels where hundreds of people show up just to learn how to, you know, just to write about anime. You know, so right. there's definitely interest in gaining insight into how the process works and how to get in on that and what kind of work is involved. And to me, that's useful just because I you know, even just as someone who writes critically about these silly cartoons, I constantly have people approaching me, you know, asking me to write things for free because, you know, oh, that's easy, right? And anything that combats that mentality would be brilliant.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's my full-time job to do this, and I get countless people mm-hmm. wanting to write for free. They don't understand why I won't take their work for free.
Right. Here's an interesting question. Has any of your guys' work been pirated?
Yeah, people rip off ANN all the time. They start up a website that's like anime news nortboard or something .biz.
And then all their news updates are just, you know, ANN updates from 5 minutes ago.
It doesn't stop there.
The links in the same order, et cetera, et cetera.
It doesn't stop there. I've had people pirate my entire editorial content. They'll repost Shelf Life and Answer Man. I'm surprised AnCast isn't under some other label, the Orncast or something.
I still find like little anime fan sites where they'll just copy paste my reviews and paste their name at the bottom.
Yep.
And
happens all the time.
They'll still update the front page themselves, and like the distinction between my writing voice and the voice they use to write the front page updates is kind of hilarious.
You want to hear something really terrifying? I actually, back in the bad old days when Crunchyroll was piracy, I actually had to send them a CND because they were posting ANN TV.
Yeah, our short-lived news program.
Wow, like the sexiness of Mario Bueno is just unassailable. But yeah, I mean, as a podcaster, I release my show under Creative Commons Share and Share Alike. So if people wanted to do that, they are free to do so, provided they don't make any money off of it. So I haven't technically been pirated because, you know, for podcasting, very few people make money. As far as print magazines go, there have been some cases where people just either take photographs of the articles or scan things and put them up, and you have to kind of say, hey, what are you doing? And then, you know, yeah. But I usually don't directly do that myself. I usually say, like, this is, you know, work for hire. I'll tell the people who own it to go after them instead of me.
There was a case recently on Twitter where one of Conan O'Brien's writers wrote a big article about, you know, his days at the short-lived Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien, and it was in the GQ comedy issue that came out, and I follow this guy on Twitter because he's really funny. And he retweeted somebody saying, hey, I'm borrowing my brother's GQ. I'll scan this article about Conan by this guy using his Twitter name in the message.
Yeah, so he'd see it.
Yeah, so he would see it, saying, thinking like, oh, I'm doing this guy a favor. And the guy's response was, do you have any work that I can pirate for free and give out to people for free? Like, he was pissed. And I think there's just this massive disconnect that people think that distributing the work of creative professionals for free is somehow doing them a favor. And I think the few cases, or the, you know, the several cases where that has worked, have sort of become this ironclad rule that you're always helping the artist if you're giving a shit away for free.
Yeah, the upstart mentality doesn't really work once you've become established.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would submit that a reality show of people sitting at their keyboards would be pretty dull.
Well, okay, right, but I think drawing comics could be made interesting. I mean, making dresses isn't all that interesting either, but they've managed to make it interesting for 8 seasons on Project Runway. So there's ways to make these things interesting and but still portraying.
I mean, come on, they're casting for season 2 of, you know, America's Next Game Tester.
Yeah.
They can make console game testing interesting. They can make...
Game testing is the worst job ever. It was my first actual job. And I will tell you that they have their work cut out for them. That said, the people who apply are some crazy personality people. So if you wanted to get ample reality TV fodder, you got it. I think, yeah, comic creators are also crazy, insane, lunatic people if you find the right ones. And it could happen. I mean, I don't have a show I could put out, but, you know, hey, that's an idea.
It's interesting.
I hear myself saying we need a reality show, and really it just comes out as a dry heave.
Yeah, right, because it's like, oh yeah, what we need is more reality television.
Well, not only that, it contributes to the glut of entertainment. We have too much entertainment.
We're sort of talking
And thanks to the internet, every entertainment that has ever existed in the 20th century is now all competing with itself. And we add more of it every day.
Right. I watch Persona, or I watch, you know, an old Cary Grant movie on Netflix.
Right, but this is getting far away from the point, which is how do you educate people about this sort of thing? And it's just we're talking about fundamentals here, just a concept.
I almost think that you got to just do fundamentals and sort of maybe even write off like the current generation as like lost. They're set, they're indoctrinated, you can't do much for them, their minds are made up, and just get people while they're young, as it were. And do the groundwork at like the places where these people are going to first get introduced to anime as a fandom thing, either through small local conventions, not like the big, you know, 30,000 people shows, because that's where you go once you've got the money for it, but like the local town places that are, you know, free to attend or 1 or 2 days. That's where you need people going out and spreading the message that you and Justin and Mike and I are espousing, because that's where people are going to go first. I mean, you can't go onto every corner of Facebook or, you know, LiveJournal or Twitter or whatever it is people are using now. But if you do this stuff while they're like, quote unquote, young anime fans, at least they'll hear it and consider it before they have fallen into a habit. Does that make sense?
No, that makes sense, but that actually is a great segue into the next sort of topic here, and that is the generational, the age gap. How much of this is attributed to just youth? Like, these are just teenagers, they're broke anyway, doesn't matter. And
free media is all they've ever known.
That's all
they're
ever,
not like us who started VHS, where it was difficult and time consuming to pirate.
Well, we've got to be some kind of weird in between, because I pirated the fuck out of things all the way through high school and college. I mean, I started pirating PC games when I was but a lad.
My parents had a Macrovision breaker box.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like piracy I've never known it. But we must be some kind of weird middle generation, because my parents certainly, I mean, they might have traded tapes or something, or LPs back in the day, but I mean, we've certainly all been pirates at one point or another, but the current generation is just us, like, times 10 in terms of the piracy, you think?
Yeah, I mean, piracy is just kind of all they've ever known. That's always been the path of least resistance for them.
I disagree. I'm not to be the one that stands up for the youngins, but I think they are exactly we would have been had the means been there.
No, hey, nobody.
I'm not trying to cast aspersions on them.
Yeah,
I just think you know they're a product of their environment in that way.
Yeah,
but at the same time, you know what we have to remember is what we're really talking about for in terms of anime consumption and the piracy of it is literally talking about trading taped off the air Seinfeld episodes. It just looks a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, well
when you put it that way, I guess this whole podcast is over, Justin. Okay, see you. No,
I mean, I guess so, but happening on a global, massive, millions of people scale.
Yeah.
Right. The digital transport. Yeah, the information that's, you know, instantaneously transferred now, such that, you know, you're not trading it from one person, you're trading it to thousands of people instantly or within, you know, an hour or two, amplifies the problem, you know, exponentially. And, you know, you're right, Justin. If we had had these means back then, I'm sure we probably stood a chance of turning out exactly the same way. That said, I don't know if it's just a youth issue, because what I've been noticing is it's been this way for at least 8 or 9 years, probably 10 years. And what happens is, you know, to use that, you know, tired out, dazed and confused quote is, I get older and they stay teenagers, because what happens is they become fans of anime and are, you know, really invested into it, you know, one way or another. And then rather than change their mentalities, they just drop off entirely to be replaced with a whole new set of people who are, you know, that same rough age, you know, 13, 14 and, you know, or 20s in college, as the case may be. And it iterates one more time and no one seems to learn anything. And we end up having the exact same circular discussions and arguments month after month, year after year. So
yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Part of why I, as I said earlier, just kind of walked away from the whole piracy argument is because, you know, in like 2004 and 2005, I was finding myself getting into the same arguments with these 16-year-olds as the arguments I would hear for like scummy video pirates in 1994.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other thing is, and I want to say that being a, you know.
Oh, and point of clarification, when I say scummy video pirates, I don't mean just tape traders. I mean the dudes who would set up dealer's room tables and sell anime fan subs for $20 a tape.
Yeah, those guys.
Oh, I remember those guys.
You know, but being a, you know, personal, this has certainly been my personal experience. As I grew older, as I started making a living wage for myself, as I was able to support myself, my urge to pirate or my desire to pirate went away almost completely. Do you think that that's normal? Do you think as someone who's 16 and broke becomes 25, making $40,000 a year, does he start buying things? Because I certainly did.
To an extent, yes.
I think some people do, some people don't.
Hang on.
Yeah, I think that's not happening to as great an extent, perhaps. Used to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I'm very much a guy where, like, yeah, I'll grab a, you know, digital this or digital that, but if there's a product on a shelf that I can buy of something I want, then I want that physical item. You know, that's
right.
full stop. I have to have it. You know, a digital copy sitting on the hard drive, it's not going to be good enough.
But we're hardcore collectors, the lot of us. I know us. And a lot of people just don't consume media like that. And as more and more content lives on the cloud, that becomes less and less important.
Right.
Yeah, that was actually a topic of, you know, the previous Ancast, that that collector mentality is kind of becoming a thing of the past as fandom becomes more casual, as it were, where there isn't that hardcore desire to accumulate information or data. People are just sort of viewing anime like any other entertainment, which was our whole goal, you know, when we started the whole anime fandom thing. It's like, yeah, get anime out there. To an extent, it succeeded, and to an extent, we failed, because people view anime and value it roughly the same way they value all entertainment more and more as we go. It just happens to be that, you know, it's worth nothing. So
that was that's important, though. I mean, we need to realize that part of the engagement of anime for our generation was indeed the thrill of the hunt.
Yeah, it wasn't easy to get. Right. And when you finally got something, you were more likely to cherish it and like it. The things that were out there, because they were harder to distribute, harder to even procure and or subtitle, people would be more selective in what they'd pick. So they'd, you know, say, oh, this wasn't, you know, good enough. We'll pick the better show to do instead. And so it made a filtering effect. That filter is gone now. Everything pretty much, you know, with some exceptions, is out there and available, such that people are overwhelmed by choice, not just because of the massive quantity of things that are getting made now, but the fact that, like Mike said, everything from the past is now available as well. People have no idea where to start, and so everyone is just like, okay, it's all just stuff.
Well, let's take a step back for a second, though. What, I mean, that level of engagement, I mean, because everything is so available now, even, you know, even an outright, you know, slobbering nerd like me, I can't feel that same excitement that I did in the 90s, because it's just the obscurity isn't there. There is no anticipation and then release. Something needs to replace that. Otherwise, there's no engagement.
Well, let me tie this into something that, you know, has nothing to necessarily directly to do with what Justin just said, but it emphasizes the same idea. The ANN Encyclopedia is fantastic, and I use it constantly. I just am amazed that I can, within one click, find out information about a given title that would have taken months, if not years, you know, back when I was originally a fan. How many episodes are there of Gundam? Ooh, who knows? You know, how many different shows are there? I don't know. Now it's there, and it's easy, and it's trivial. It's like, why do you even value that? It's like, it's right there on Wikipedia, dude. And so, you know, that drive is unnecessary, and so most people don't have it.
Well, I think what it does, ultimately, is it makes quality king. It makes it, I get as excited, I would say, as a 30-year-old, I get as excited for a new episode of Mad Men as I did for a new episode of Escaflowne when I was 15. I get as excited. And I'm a big movie, film, TV nerd, so I get excited about that kind of thing. But now it's about quality. It's not about, well, I can't wait until the tape comes in. It's, I can't wait until it airs and I watch it. It's not about hunting things anymore. It's about getting excited about quality material.
And you know, so it's interesting you say that, because now I get the same thrill from, like, oh, I can engineer this, my own Cowboy Bebop movie Blu-ray.
Right.
You know,
so you're
the same thing.
So you found a new way to basically provide yourself with some adrenaline in your hobby. Yeah.
I think Zach's approach is a little more common.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me,
you're a weird guy, but yeah.
Well, the full Alchemist Brotherhood, you know, that every Thursday, that was my appointment TV. It's just like, I can't wait until Thursday for the next episode. And that's part of why I think, yeah, the online streaming really has a future, because that was something I was once very skeptical of, but man, I watched all like 64 episodes of that thing, like every Thursday, as soon as they dropped.
Wow. Yeah. And
I think you're right, Zach. I think that notion of the desire for quality programming has superseded, you know, the previous, you know, hardcore investments into, you know, something different. But that's compounded by a problem that we don't get as much quality programming as we would like. I mean, you know, that's always the case. But I mean, within the last year or two, even though, like we said earlier, the amount of shows are decreasing.
Listen, man, don't denigrate legendary legend of the legendary heroes of legend.
There were too many legends in that, Mike.
Jesus Christ, I hate that show. So just
someone will defend it.
Of course they will. So just to sort of put a button on this before we get to Twitter, I just wanted to say we're all older fans. We all have our own, you know, peccadilloes and ideas about piracy and what younger fans should do and how they should behave. But do you think that the onus truly is on us to just be tolerant and just wait and give these people their time to kind of be dumbasses about this sort of thing?
I think the onus is on us, but the onus is not to wait. I think the onus is we have to somehow educate, even though we were talking about how do we do that, we don't know. The onus is on us to figure that out. My solution is just to say these things exist and they're good and you should support them. And if 2 out of 50 people listen, that'll add up over time.
Yeah.
So that's really not a bad strategy, you know, coming, like I said, from my point of view of, you know, I'm tired of being angry about this and feeling like I have to put up my dukes and fight. I think that, you know, given time, an awful lot of people will reach a point where it will just be easier for them to support the media, to purchase the things they want to keep and to just, you know, experience once the things that they just want to experience once. Just hopefully in a way that that can create some revenue for the people who make the art.
I think the continued flame wars are probably the least constructive thing to come out of this. What really needs to happen is that when we get the valuable time of some big Japanese animator coming in and doing a convention, why the hell are we wasting them at a Q&A? Why aren't they putting on a workshop where they, you know, show the fans exactly how what it would take to get their crappy little idea animated and, you know, working them into the ground?
Go to Animazement in North Carolina. I don't know if he's been around in recent years, but for many years, they had a senior animator named Koichi Tsunoda, who was one of the guys at Toei who worked on Candy and Mazinger Z, and that was kind of his bag when he worked at the convention. You know, he'd set up a whole bunch of flip charts and actually show fans, you know, how to create a sequence of animated drawings. And you know, what kind of work went into it and what, you know, what they would have to do to those drawings after they were made to turn it into real animation.
Well, that's cool. That's cool that it happens there. It should happen at AX and Otakon, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it needs to happen across the board whenever there are guests of that caliber, which is usually at the larger conventions. But what I've noticed is even at the larger conventions, the amount of people on staff who even know who they are is still just a subset of that. And so to have the foresight to put something like that together is often not even on the table for a lot of these guys.
That might be part of it, but another part of it is I don't want to go to those conventions because they're freaking boring.
Okay,
well, or those panels, rather.
Well, that's you personally. We're sort of talking about a wider umbrella here of people who are interested in that sort of thing.
Right. How to get more than just, you know, 10 people at the Japanese guests, you know, panel, you know, would be instead of saying, okay, come to this panel to find out, you know, who the heck this guy is, you know, maybe that's less, you know, utterly, you know, ultimately productive than let this guy show you how to do a cool thing that you always wanted to know how to do.
When you're a teenager and you're into anime, you want to put your mark on it. You know, you want to put your mark on whatever you are passionate about at that age. That's just kind of the natural proclivity. I think if we want to change minds and if we want to get people to start, you know, respecting the art form, that's our door in, is that engagement. Here's how you become a part of this and, you know, hold their hand through the process. Once they see the process, you can't help but have respect for it.
Well, you can't help but have respect for it. And once you fail at something, you know, because most of the people who try this, try their hand at it, most people try their hand at creative professions fail.
Right.
You can't help but have, like, I have tremendous amount of respect for people who can play the clarinet. I tried to take up the clarinet. I was awful at it. And so now it's like, wow, that's not an easy thing to do. Or it's
I
not
played
easy
the clarinet for several years and then I stopped because I decided I hated music.
Right.
But it's not easy.
It, right? You respect musicians. Like, you have respect for their talent and their craft. And, you know, that once, and I think you're exactly right. I think showing kids the process, like what Mike was talking about that you just said was too boring, that sort of thing is how you engage.
That's not what I meant.
That sort of thing is how you engage these kids and show them, like, hey, this is a really cool but really tough process, and you should have respect for these people for doing this and bringing you joy in the process. I don't know. at the same time, you can't talk down to them or they get pissed off. Okay.
So I have to point out, I played the clarinet in school, too. How about you, Justin? Did you play the clarinet?
I did not play clarinet. I
wanted to have like piano. Okay, so you can play piano. We'll all play clarinet, and we'll have a band.
I'm gonna switch to the slide.
Just like those girls in K-On.
God damn.
It'll be a huge hit.
Jesus.
Okay, so we got to get to Twitter.
I have other artistic feelings I can point to.
Tim on, everyone knows Tim. He asks, we sort of talked about this already, but we can touch on it. He says that he feels a lot of issues in anime fandom are age-related, and it seems often anime fandom is more about teen rebellion than it is about anime. I would say that's certainly a factor.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, anime fandom is more about being on the internet than it is about anime. Yeah. I mean,
What do you mean? I question what Tim means when he says anime fandom. I think he just means con culture, right?
Con, right? I guess I would say con and
their own
culture.
Thing now.
Yeah,
I don't know about you guys, but I know I delighted whenever my mother complained loudly about the shrill Japanese voices.
That never happened to me. I guess I never had the these darn cartoons are gonna rot your brain. I didn't have that to, you know, be like, screw you, Dad, I'm going to watch Megazone or whatever. But
yeah, I mean, I think it's funny to think of con culture as rebellion, because from my point of view, con culture creates a safe space for kids and teenagers.
Well, that
right. I think it's conformity.
Demonstrably yeah. Uniform. Yeah, it is absolutely conformity. Imagine how many conventions do you go to where you hear the stupid Marco Polo thing? I mean, it's all conformity.
Well, I mean, it's also stuff like the concerts. You know, for a huge number of kids that go to these things, they go to the anime, you know, they really want a concert to be at the convention because that's the first concert that they're going to see in their lives.
Yeah.
And I mean, I the first concerts I saw were like, you know, hardcore and punk shows in church basements. And I think about just like, oh, you go to the convention to see the concert. And I think, are you kidding me?
Really? Yeah, no, I mean, that's certainly true. And you sort of have to separate them a little bit because what happens on the internet is so unique to the internet that, of course, people are going to be, quote-unquote, rebellious, fighting against any perceived enemy they can just because that's what teenagers do. So you're going to see a lot more of that online. And you know, anime fandom attracts a lot of teenagers, and so, of course, you're going to see a lot of that. I don't think it's a fundamental part of anime fandom. I don't think that's true.
Nah.
Hey, you know, if you go to the Usenet archives at groups.google.com, and if you search for find posts from me on rec.arts.anime when I was 18, and yeah, I was kind of a little shit. So I don't know. Maybe there's some truth to that.
I think you know what I think. We're all little shits at some point.
I still am.
Okay. From Shintaku, this is a good question. What is good about current fandom?
I think what's good about current fandom is they are very accepting of people in general. Like, it's pretty easy, you know, to just strike up conversations if you're, you know, within that group. I'm a 30-year-old guy, so whenever I go to the convention, I'm not, like, striking up conversations with people because, you know, there's a pretty good chance that, you know, I might get, you know, Chris Hansen at my door eventually.
Yeah.
But I think there is this general overarching sense that everyone's kind of in it together, that you really are, when you go to that convention, you know, among friends, and you can be yourself, as it were. Whether or not yourself is a total jerkwad that I don't want to, you know, have thrust in my face is another story. But I think that's a good thing about fandom now. I think another good thing about fandom now is that they are generally apt to, like, and I don't know if this is necessarily good, but when something hits it big, like, they really want to share it with other people by any means necessary, and that might even tie into that, you know, oh, I'm giving you free promotion, what do you mean stuff? You know, they really want to go the distance and say, oh, you didn't see this? Here. Or, you know, it's go out and get this. They want to bring in people. Their methods may be disagreeable to some extent, but that is the mentality that you need to have, because go to any, like, literary sci-fi convention and find, like, the, you know, aging Highland fanatics who don't want anybody discovering their precious books, and you'll see that that is not a universal constant.
That's true. And one other thing that I think, this is a new trait among anime nerds, is people are getting really self-conscious about being total weeaboos.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
That's a net positive. I just like the fact that there is so much of it. I love the fact that there are, you know, we're starting to see separate and distinct fandoms for moe anime, for stuff targeted at otaku, for stuff targeted at fujoshi, for mecha, for old anime, for new anime, for mahjong anime, for sports anime. You know, I just love the fact that there is such a broad range of people with such a broad range of interests. And it's still, and because it's all on the internet, it's quite easy for us all to come together and share it.
Yeah.
Even if all those necessary groups might actually be at each other's throats most of the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean just look at this. This is a phenomenon that I've observed for years. Like 10 years ago, all the Sailor Moon websites hated each other. I knew a lady who had a Sailor Moon website, you know, one of the more popular ones. And she would pass me all sorts of insider information, copy paste from, you know, mailing list Flame Wars. And the thing is, I still see that happening, only now, like lately, I've noticed it happening on Evangelion fan sites.
Yep.
The same arguments, the same people. It's like different factions of Christianity, you know?
You know, the drama really just happens everywhere. I remember probably the worst Flame Wars of my life. The ones that like genuinely upset me were the ones on the anime fan sub mailing list, you know, back in like 97. Oh, yeah.
Well, there are some damaged people out there. This friend of mine, my friend Mara, one of her favorite musicians of all time was Joe Strummer, and he was the lead singer of The Clash. As you might know, he had a congenital heart problem that he died of quite suddenly a few years ago, and she got an email when this happened out of the blue. The morning it happened from an anonymous person who was just like, "Hey, I knew you back in the Sailor Moon days, and I really didn't like you at all. I know this musician was important to you, so I just thought you should know that he's dead."
Wow, that person leads an awesome life.
That is brutal.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, I kind of in a horrible way admire that.
Yeah.
That you hold the grudge like a Sicilian mafia.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean. And even she herself was just like, I spent a moment being horrified by this, but afterwards thinking about it, just like, it's just so interesting that someone carried that grudge against me for so long and just waited so patiently for something that they knew would ruin my day and come along just so they could crow about it.
And over Sailor Moon.
Yes.
And their day of triumph finally came. Yeah. Back to the question.
Over Sailor Pluto websites in particular.
Oh my God. So back to the question.
Sorry.
I just want to...
Don't laugh, Justin. She's the one who could drive a car.
Just to finish off this question, the best thing I've seen is that anime fans, older fans in particular, seem to actually be growing a sense of humor about themselves, which is incredibly important. There's still a big problem where people just take themselves way too seriously in anime fandom, but I'm seeing a lot more people willing to joke about it and joke about and have a laugh and joke about themselves and their fandom, and I think that's super important towards a positive and happy environment, and I'm seeing a little bit more of that here and there. People just willing to joke about it and take a joke. That's a huge thing.
That's true.
Right. And so moving on, sort of the opposite question. How do we deal with these kids and their Marco Polo shit at conventions all the time, and how can we get them to knock it the fuck off? This is from Bamboo.
This is there's a way to do this, and I saw it happen, and it works. The Fire only way that this has to be done by the convention staff. That's where the con culture is established and enforced. Otakon was a great convention. They had rules against this. That whenever people tried to start this thing up, someone clearly identifiable as staff says, "Hey, knock it off. If you keep doing that, we're going to have to ask you to leave." And, you know, between that and enough other people, you know, not everybody saying, "Hey, shut up," eventually that'll give them the idea that, okay, I shouldn't be doing this. But that's not what happens at most conventions. At the last convention I went to, if someone shouted Marco, the staff people, the volunteers holding the door would shout back Polo, because it's like, what are they going to do? They don't have any authority to enforce the rule. It's like, so they may as well go along for the ride.
Yeah,
that's how you get to stop.
Yeah, the shout memes were present at Otakon, but they were muted, and they were muted because of the quick and you know, comprehensive response from the staff. And really, I think that is all that is needed, is to just, you know, for someone, and it doesn't even have to be a staff person, to just step in and be like, "Hey, could you guys knock that off?"
I think it does kind of have to be someone with authority, Mike. I think if someone else just says knock it off, they'll be like, oh, I'm getting on the squares is case.
Paying attention.
Can we just have one public execution? Wouldn't that solve everything?
No.
Well, Marco Polo leads to all kinds of interesting games like Marco Shut Up, and then by Sunday, Marco Fuck You.
I really think the answer to that is that the con has to set the culture from, you know, the top down, as it were, and give people who are staff, you know, some sort of authority to render out decisions and enforce them. But that's hard because people are unreliable.
Well, by all accounts.
What I also wonder is, at Otakon, I didn't see it. Was anyone an example of? Was there anyone who was just being too hyper, too spastic, would not shut up, and a staffer had to just walk over to him, yank his badge off, and point at the door?
I think the only people who have the authority to do that, whether it's Otakon or whether it's the smaller cons, are like very high-level staff people who, by and large, are backstage in the con ops sort of area, putting out fires that the average attendee would never see. They're the only ones who really have that authority to say, like, okay, you're out of here. Like,
I actually know for a fact that happened at AX this year with the Vuvuzelas.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thank God, by the way.
Yeah, really. That needs to happen. Because, I mean, it was like the second you saw that catch on the internet, you know it's going to happen at the AnimeCon, because the AnimeCon is the internet in person at this point.
Well, I mean, specifically AX, I should mention, it's never been a rowdy convention. The memes have never really sprouted up too bad there. It's never been like that, having been to a lot of East Coast and a lot of West Coast conventions. AX is very calm. It's kind of muted. It's just not a natural occurrence there. But what you're saying, if con staff has to enforce it, by all accounts, Anime Boston is going to need to hire a fucking legion of shock troopers in order to get it under control.
Yeah, that kind of really...
I think they should.
Yeah, it needs to happen. I think that is a worthwhile long-term investment.
Yeah. Yeah, that con is still growing, you know, and to keep it comfortable for everyone, they're gonna have to take steps.
Okay, all right. I'm kind of trying to keep these on topic, but we can get into some of these that are a little off topic. Andrea Papalu wants to know, how do you feel about the pirate then shift to legal business model Crunchyroll is, he says, promoting? But the notion here is that, you know, they got $2 million in venture capital. We talked about this last week, being a pirate site, and now there are other sites that are pretty clearly trying to emulate that.
Yes, crunchy clones, we refer to them as.
Right. There's a whole lot of places out there that kind of try to get like a community built up from illegal activity and then say, look, we've got hundreds of thousands of viewers here. And then they try to get seed money or venture capital. And this appears to be like the stock model of like internet success in a lot of ways. And I don't know if you noticed
that. What else
that?
Besides,
I mean,
Crunchyroll?
Well, you know, the guy even said YouTube was a great example of that. I mean, they got bought out for Google by how much crazy $1 billion?
Yeah.
And then even in the anime industry, you know, there are places that made their money from either selling those bootleg tapes or from being traders, you know, with a D, not traitors, and eventually deciding, hey, look at this money we've got. You know, we'll try and go legit, you know, or convince people that, you know, we're ready to start and do businesses.
The only people I can think of that did that were Anime Crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you have to remember, Justin, most of the anime industry, okay, maybe perhaps not most, but a lot of the folks in the anime industry were fan subbers before they got jobs in the industry.
I don't know anything about that at all, Mike. Nothing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you wouldn't know anything about that, of course. But it happens, nevertheless. So in that respect, I don't think that Crunchyroll's approach is really all that unusual. I think it's not great that they started off as an online piracy venture, but the fact that they were able to make it work and get people in the anime business paid, that's a success story, and I hope it continues.
Yeah, I'm completely done blaming Crunchyroll, casting aspersions on Crunchyroll for their past. I'm done with it because they've turned it into what is obviously a working business that is bringing money into the anime industry. So more power to them. That's my attitude.
Yeah, I mean it. I don't really single out, you know, Crunchyroll in particular. I just noticed the practice in general of places, you know, scan sites, places that do streaming videos of TV shows, as it were, and then using that to get ad revenue from, you know, that sort of thing, and then trying to say, okay, now we can turn this around and sell it to someplace. I mean, that seems to be like one of the proven internet business models. I don't know if I approve of it necessarily, but it's got a pedigree.
I just love when they try to buy ad space on ANN.
Well, one thing I should say that is sort of important here is that I think the reason people look at Crunchyroll this way is because while before it was happening on a smaller scale, someone starts out as a fan subber and they get a job at ADV or whatever. That's a small thing. No one really notices. But millions of people and millions of dollars are involved. Suddenly everybody notices the big, stark, black and white, hey, terrible hypocrisy and unfairness going on. And so that Crunchyroll kind of blew it up into the macro. And I think that's why people sort of point to that as kind of a, you know, bad example or whatever. So moving on, Ed Sizemore wants to know what Daryl thinks of Kiyohiku Azuma not permitting Yatsuba to be made into an anime.
It's entirely his call to make as far as not permitting it. I don't know why he's concerned. Is like, was Azumanga Daioh adapted poorly? I don't think it was. But, you know, hey, it's his creation. It's his property. This was actually brought on by an image I had posted on Twitter to a phony, you know, listing of like, here's what's coming out in the next season. And, you know, with the joke being that if this had actually been what we'd gotten, I would think that would be a much bigger boon than what we're actually getting, because, you know, the content of this picture, I didn't make it, is a lot of sequels to very popular things, a good balance of shows that are accessible versus shows for otaku, etc., etc. And one of them was a hypothetical Yatsuba to anime. I don't know why Azuma won't let it happen. Maybe he's concerned that it'll be selling out a la Bill Watterson, Calvin and Hobbes.
I was going to say, the first thought that I had, Bill Watterson. Second thought that I had was maybe he just doesn't want to see the explosion in pornographic doujinshi like the one that happened in the wake of Azumanga Daioh.
Yeah, that's probable. Of course, you know, Dengeki Daioh is kind of a crazy publication in the first place. I'm not sure what the readership
is. I mean, isn't it kind of, doesn't it have a lot of sort of moe stuff to begin with?
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
Azuma's got his money, I think, at this point.
Yeah,
I don't think he cares.
And if he says no anime, that's his prerogative.
Yeah. All right, from Andre Poplu again. Do you guys think DVD and physical media will continue to be a part of the anime market in the next 5 years? I would say, yeah, it's going to take longer than 5 years for physical media to die.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be as much. It's going to be on a steady decline. I mean, even now, the DVD sections of pretty much every major brick-and-mortar store is dwindling more and more. And the anime section is being drastically cut down, if not vanishing outright. But it's still going to be there. I mean, it's not like it's going to completely vanish just like that. I mean, these things do pull in some revenue. It's just with fewer and fewer people buying anything. I mean, everyone's got Netflix, and most of the people who have Netflix are like, I don't even need the discs. I just need the streaming account. And so anyone feeling that, or am I alone?
Yeah,
in that?
No, that's, well, I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people also point out that even with print dying, it's probably going to take a very long time for newspapers to go away. I think it's the same deal. It's, you know, there's going to be a segment of the buying public who just want physical media. And they're not going to have the selection that they had a few years ago, but it's still going to be there.
I think the metric we can put on it is 20 years after the death of Andy Rooney. I think that's when we'll see the real death of print media and physical media.
Right.
Okay.
As long as I'm alive, there will be at least one media hoarder.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they can delete stuff from streaming at any moment. So when there's a physical version of it out there, I'm like, okay, I'm getting that now. That way always have it.
I love streaming media, but I'm intensely paranoid that if anything is the least bit rare, just like, wait a minute, what if this is going to be gone tomorrow and I can never watch it again?
Yeah, I think that fuels a lot of collectors. It's more paranoia that it's going to be gone someday.
And hey, almost everything ended up going out of print, so.
Yeah. Okay, from Control 2000, do you think the old school shows being released, Fist of the North Star, Sea Prince and the Fire Child, will help DVD sales?
I'm going to say no. Those are for diehard fans like me only.
Yeah.
Well, Sea Prince, I think, is a case of coming too late. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, 30 years.
I think about 8 or 10 years ago, if Sea Prince and the Fire Child had come out on DVD, I think that it would have been a minor success story if there were outlets like Sam Goody and Suncoast to actually push it to the people who walk into the store who would have remembered seeing it on the Disney Channel in 1982. But
yeah,
they
would either remember seeing it, or they could put, like, from the makers of Hello Kitty, and then you could get people buying that.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Selling it in the Sanrio store. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but that whole sales channel is gone now. So I think only people that already know about Sea Prince and the Fire Child are going to buy it. And I think that number is kind of small. I've got a column coming out soon that will hopefully alleviate that knowledge gap. We'll see.
Oh, yeah. I reviewed it on my podcast, but that was like 3 years ago.
And yeah, I wrote a buried treasure about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's for people like us. It's not going to be like suddenly on the Billboard charts, you know, rocketing to number one with a bullet, Sea Prince and the Fire Child, and then Fist of the North Star.
Fist of the North Star fell on its face from manga video. I don't think it's. I was really kind of shocked when they picked it up.
Well, there's that whole stumbling block of the first 36 or so episodes being the worst part of the entire series.
Right. It's the filler, as it were, because most of those stories weren't in the comic, and so they're of significantly lesser quality. And who's going to watch past episode 34 waiting for something to get good, which entire series now are 13 episodes? You know, so that's not going to really be a game changer in my mind.
I don't think Discotech are going to lose their shirts releasing stuff like this, but I think it's going to be very difficult for them to make a significant profit. I think they're probably aiming to just break even or slightly better on stuff like this.
Yeah, kind of the right stuff model.
Right.
Staying in business, keeping your head above water, keeping the lights on, but that's about it.
By the way, Daryl, can I skip those episodes if I was just starting to watch it?
Yes, absolutely.
So I could just skip it, start at episode 35 and just be happy?
You can watch like a couple episodes, you know, just to get an idea. But I mean, that's a show where, you know, they'll recap you for you if something's important.
I mean, you can honestly, I mean, can't you really just watch the movie? Well, no, the movie, there's too much. Like the first half of the movie, maybe.
Okay.
It's hard. I mean, I could give like a list of like watch this one, and skip, you know, and then just watch it to the end. You know, from this point on, but you know, it's not clean.
Right. This is actually sort of an important point that I have in the course of our conversation. I think I have come to a new understanding about this. Also, from Mangia Poplu, are the people who attack creators and companies for taking on bootleggers actually fans? Now, the definition of who's a fan and who's not is a big sore subject on the forums. But after our conversation today, I'm going to say you can't tell. It might be a fan with just some misguided notions, or they've just been, you know, stuck on some beliefs that are sort of unfortunate. You can't tell if it's just a misguided fan or if it's just a legit asshole who thinks they're being an edgy teen by being a dick to everybody who provides things for, you know, creates entertainment for them. You can't tell.
I think the problem is that if you are if a fan is going to come out and say something like, yeah, well, you know, screw the creators, I'm gonna do what I want, then they are, by saying that, they're kind of marginalizing themselves. I mean, I see something like that, and I think, oh, well, if you're not going to give back and try and participate in the whole process of getting anime out there and getting people paid for it, then you can be safely ignored.
Yeah.
In my personal circles, I kind of draw the line between, like, okay, who's a casual viewer and who's a fan by a level of investment. And by that, I mean, you know, not just monetary, but also, you know, effort to go out and involve themselves with it. But, you know, monetary has to be a part of it too. I mean, I think if you want to call yourself a fan, you have to at least put forth some sort of, you know, wallet sacrifice in support of the thing that you love. But that's just me and my, you know, personal circle of friends speaking. I can't go and say, this is the ironclad rule, so I declare, unless it's Twitter. In that case, I'll do it just fine.
I mean, and there can be a huge swing in variance of that, too. I mean, if you're an anime fan, but you only really care to own, like, a couple of Miyazaki movies, that's cool. If that's all you care to own. But, I mean, if you're just going to be like, well, I don't want to buy any of this.
I'm really not interested in how
Go from there?
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole notion of who's a fan and who's not, it's just dick waving. I mean, either you like the content a lot or you like it a little.
I don't know. My personal definition has always been that the word fan indicates that to me that they have some value to the artist, that they're doing something. They're part of the cycle that helps this artist create things. That's always sort of been my personal definition. If you're a fan of something, that means you support it. And that's my personal definition, and a lot of people don't believe that. They just think if you like something, you're a fan. And Justin's right. It is basically a dick-waving semantics contest that doesn't really amount to anything, and I know people get really
butthurt. But that's the internet.
That is the internet. You're right. Exactly. That's the internet. This is 2010. I guess we just have to deal with it. Okay, from Ben the Bear, do you think, I'm not sure quite what he's saying here, we can probably suss it out, do you think new fans only wanting new shows, 2005 to present, do you think new fans will be turned away by the large amount of otaku bait shows that are coming out now?
Yes.
No.
Oh, okay.
All right. Now we've got a fight. Right.
For the record, okay. I think you're both right.
Yeah, Justin, go ahead first.
Okay, I don't think any specific show will make someone go, oh, you know what, this is terrible, I don't want to be a part of this, and run away. I do think the scene as a whole being too skeevy will make people think twice about getting too into anime.
I agree with that 100%.
I do agree with you on that, but as far as the people who are already in, I kind of think there's a widespread amorality at play that, you know, they're not really concerned with that. What will happen is that glut of shows aren't going to turn them away for their content being too, like, objectionable morally. It's going to turn them away because they're all eventually going to realize how samey they are. That they're, it's not the unique, cool thing that it once was when they first started. And that is what'll turn them away. Unless, you know, they just have no taste, which, you know, is a distinct possibility on this internet. But I get the feeling that a lot of those people get really, really invested in those shows for a certain period of time, and then they burn out, and then they just stop watching anime entirely.
I think
that's how I see
quality.
It.
I think quality comes into play. I think that there's always going to be a certain influx of fans, but I think the quality of those fans and their level of commitment is going to vary based on how good the actual product is. Like, how many people do you think out there are going to become anime fans because they watch Koihime Musou?
I mean, I gotta be.
They're gonna go and read the Romance of the Three Kingdoms because they love that show so much.
A couple of them will, and that's awesome. But you know, for the majority, I don't know.
I gotta be honest. I'm seeing, and you mentioned this earlier, that it's sort of becoming separate fandoms. The crowd of folks that's really into the stuff that the hardcore Japanese are into, all the moe stuff, the loli stuff, that's kind of becoming its own fandom. And I think you'll either have someone who's drawn to that stuff and goes into that stuff, or they're drawn to the other stuff. They're watching the Maid Samas, and they're watching the Occult Academies, and they're watching Fist of the North Star. They're watching, you know, the stuff that isn't that, because it's such a clear delineation between the two. Like, you can identify a show for Japanese otaku based on one promotional image.
Right. You know? You judge a book by its cover. I mean, everyone always says, don't judge a book by its cover. But whenever the new, like, spring anime guide comes up, I can look at that thumbnail and say, I'm definitely not watching that. I'm definitely not watching that. Oh, that one might be okay. Purely by character design.
Yeah, it's true. There was a great moment where I think we were offered, what's that show, Juden-chan?
Yep.
Oh, great.
And we knew nothing about it, and I just found the one piece of key art on the yet-to-be-erected website, and it's just this girl with big boobs and big eyes, young looking face, licking a power plug with a line of drool between her tongue and the plug. And I'm just like, yeah, no.
Actually, I remember that because you saw that and you were like, hey, they're offering us this show. And I looked at it and I said, Spit String, no. And you're like, yeah. You're like, yeah, I agree.
I was holding out hope and you're like, yeah.
But yeah, I do think you're right, Zach, in the sense that crowd is very interested in the spirit of the times, the current zeitgeist. They're not likely to go back and even watch the older shows of that same mold. They're not going to be like, oh, let me see Two Heart. You know, obviously, you know, their cases may vary, but as a rule, you know, if it's not out right now, if it's not cutting edge, it may as well not exist. To that crowd of people who are just really into following, like, the bleeding edge of, like, you know, this is Japanese otaku culture stuff.
Yeah.
The other group of fans are more receptive to go back, I think. If they just need someone to point, watch this one and this one, because there's so much out there that they're not going to find it on their own.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, in the past, I think there was one door, and you walk into that door and you're an anime fan. Now there's two. There's this other door where you walk into it and you're that kind of anime fan. You're a different kind of anime fan. And I think that's new. I think that's a new thing.
But I think that there will always be fans who are into the scene as a whole rather than a specific segment or genre. I mean, I recently read this amazing string of YouTube comments from this guy who identified himself as like a 15-year-old kid, and he really, really loved Kimagure Orange Road.
I get emails like that from people of roughly that age.
Yeah,
they exist.
And he just looks at that and he's just like, it seems like higher quality animation. Also, there's this innocence, this lack of cynicism to it. It feels more real.
Yeah, no,
they're not just they don't have the checkbox in hand on, you know, okay, gotta have this, gotta have that, gotta have that, like what Tim Eldred was talking about when you had him on.
And it was made by staff who had not yet spent at least 1 year contemplating suicide.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
The drug use hadn't creeped into the animator scene yet.
Right.
Well, it had, but it hadn't become a problem.
Right. It hadn't quite
it was still
hit
the 80s.
The full saturation point of like that second generation of creators who grew up only watching anime, you know, what they created wasn't completely inscrutable to anyone who hadn't followed suit, as it might have become the case once you got to generations 3 and 4 or whatever generation we're on right now, that just grew up watching anime. That was made by people who grew up watching anime, and you end up with shows that are completely inaccessible to your average viewer. I don't know. This is not. It's the kind of thing that leads to the creation of like that door of fan.
Yeah,
there's a market for it. I'm not saying eradicate them, but they shouldn't be like every other show of the season. No. You know, the fact that Akiyuki Shimbo is getting that much shows kicked out every year is kind of a war crime in my mind.
I'm sure he enjoys
that. I'm sure I'll
Shimbo
get some angry
talentless. I'm a little more worried. I'm a little more worried about, you know, not so much that Shinbo is getting work, but that guys like Shinichi Watanabe, the Cowboy Bebop director, is not getting work. It's like, you know, what the hell is going wrong with that? The guy who helped create, you know, probably the most broadly accessible big hit of the last decade can't get a job making a series. Like,
By default every year?
Yeah.
Shouldn't they just give him something every season?
Yeah.
And, you know, not everything he does will be great, but he'll probably have a pretty good batting average.
Yeah, yeah. From Hemsworth, what in your opinion is the worst connotation attached to being an anime fan?
Japanophilia is definitely the biggest, like, negative stigma of, like, oh, okay, you like all that, you know, whatever crap, and people paint with a very broad brush, you know, the most visibly obnoxious crowd as like being like all anime fans. That's probably the worst part of that. If I heard the question right,
my Chinese grandmother gives me shit about this all the time. It's just like she tried to give me green tea once, and it was like that Lipton crap. And my mother goes, oh, he doesn't drink that. And she goes, oh, what do you drink? I'm like, you know, Japanese sencha. And she goes, oh, you Japanese, you think Japanese people fart smell good?
And you're like, well, they do, Grandma.
Right.
I think the stigma has changed over the years. When I first became a big anime fan, I would tell people I was into it, and be like, "You watch them cartoons? Why do you watch cartoons?" And of course, now we live in an era where everyone watches cartoons, where The Simpsons has been the top show for 20 years, where Seth MacFarlane can make the same show over and over and over again, and have it be a huge hit. And after that dropped off after a while, and I would get the, "Oh, well, you watch anime." Oh, that's all that pornographic cartoons, right? And,
right, that was the 90s stereotype. And then in the late 90s, it became, you watch anime, it's all that Pokemon crap, right?
Yeah,
exactly. There was that. So it changes over time. Now, actually, for the past several years,
it's that Naruto crap.
Now I'll say, yeah, I like anime. And the first question from people is just like, so do you dress up in those costumes?
I get that. I've gotten that one.
The best thing is, it's been a very long time, but back in the mid to late 90s when I was first really getting into fandom, I wore costumes. You can find pictures online if you Google them. I mean, I take great delight in telling people that, years ago I did that. And if you Google search me and look long enough, you'll find those pictures. And like, so I'll have people that will just frantically run to the web and spend hours trying to find the stuff.
To find Mike Tool in the Doraemon getup.
Yeah, and the Doraemon costume or the Daimajin costume. The Daimajin costume actually ended up pinned up on a bulletin board at work for a couple of months. Which, you know, it was one of those things that I guess there's a stigma to that, but these were guys who were both coworkers and my staff. Like, I had a staff of 8 people that worked for me. They thought that was great. They thought that was hilarious that I had this hobby that I was really demonstrative about. So I don't know if it's anymore. All I can tell you is that I'll still readily tell people that, oh yeah, I'm into this Japanese animation stuff. I think it's cool.
I tell nobody. It's like, I don't want people to find out. Of course, if you just Google my name, It's another thing, though, there it is.
Another thing, though, a lot of the times when I tell people that I'm into it, I'll point out that I write a magazine line and I actually earn money doing it. And that is usually when their tone will change completely.
It's what I do for a living. That's legit. It is what I do for a living, so I introduce it as my job. And actually, I can sort of walk right into the next question on this, which is, what's the most positive connotation you've had? And people think I have a cool job, and that's the cool. That's the best thing I can say, really. But in terms of positive connotations of being a fan of this stuff,
a lot of the folks, when I tell them, they're intensely curious about fan conventions, and part of that is because I work in places. You know, I work in audiovisual. So I work in a lot of spaces where, you know, there are times when the anime convention is opening next door. So they'll get to see the parade of cosplayers going in and out. And, you know, my coworkers will turn to me and be like, so what is, tell me about this. What is this thing?
Yeah. Anybody else? Positive connotations?
I got nothing.
Nothing. Justin, nothing?
Actually, you know, it's really weird. Ever since I moved to Hollywood, everyone's frighteningly receptive. And I can never tell how superficial they're being. It being Hollywood, probably 100%. But everyone seems to think, wow, that's really cool. And they're like, I really liked Ghost in the Shell when I was a teenager. What would you recommend? And I'm like, what? Where? Who am I?
Right. Well,
I think a lot of times people introduce me as such to cock block me. It's like, this is Daryl. He has a podcast about Japanese cartoons because he's an anime fan. It's like, thanks. Now I'm never getting laid tonight.
Wow. Yeah,
well, you know, Daryl.
The Seinfeld laugh track goes
off.
Yeah,
because, you know, Daryl, you're so assertive and you're such a hit with the ladies as long
I'm
as
on the prowl at all times.
We can wrap up here with, we got like half a dozen questions from everyone's favorite guy. The V for Vendetta, Evangelion guy.
V for Vendetta, man. You're better than Tele.
He could just ask me directly. I don't get it, but all right.
I think he just wants it to be on the show.
I'm gonna skip
a bunch of these because we're running pretty long here. The one thing I think he's got here that's sort of an interesting jumping off point is why do older fans insist that they know more about anime than when 10 years ago most of them were watching really badly fansub VHS tapes?
I think you'll see some older fans insist they know more because they do.
Because they've been interested for 10 years? I think that's maybe why.
Yeah, because they've been engaged longer, and naturally they're just going to absorb more knowledge. You know, whether or not they be lording that over other people is another argument, but...
Yeah.
On the flip side, I know some old-timers who are shockingly naive.
Yeah. Well, they formed their opinions about anime and the anime industry 10 years ago and then never changed them.
Right. Like, they're
20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I still run into a few who are genuinely shocked that Central Park Media is no longer in business.
Jesus. Under a rock. That's what they call that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then finally, he wants to know, why do some people insist that Eva's popularity peaked 10 years ago? There were fewer fans then. He wants to know. I've never heard anyone suggest that Evangelion's popularity peaked 10 years ago.
Well, I think it did peak 10 years.
I think it did.
I don't think it's gone down considerably. You know, I don't think it's a dead property.
Yeah, I mean, they still put out merchandise. They still make new stuff for it. But
they still make movies. Those movies are very popular movies.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Particularly in Japan.
But like we said earlier, now fandom has split off into multiple factions. It's hard to have that one big giant hit that gets everybody. It's almost impossible. You see this in regular media as well. That it's hard to have that like big TV show hit with a million cable channels out there. It's hard to have a one tentpole show like Evangelion in 2010 that brings together everyone. So even though there are more fans now than there were then, they're less unified now than they were then.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, actually, because this is going to be an infuriating way to address it. I think also you kind of had to be there. And in that respect, I mean, I was never that into Evangelion specifically for the content, for the animation. What I loved was the sense of excitement among fans that it generated, that it was the thing in 95 and 96, that the tape of the new episode would come in and the whole world would stop. Like everyone on the college campus that I was on would rush to whoever, you know, the dorm room, whoever had it, and watch it in rapt silence to try and figure out what the hell happened next.
And it was such a huge thing that encompassed so many people that you wouldn't normally think of as anime fans. There is nothing like that today.
Yeah. Yeah, it brought a lot of new people into the fold, too, definitely.
And that was probably a net negative, because if you watch that as your first anime, it'll mess you up, because you're not
in a really broad, if you view it really broadly, Evangelion is really the show that was probably responsible for triggering the anime boom that would happen over the next decade. And
boom in the relative sense, yes.
Yeah, yeah, boom in a relative sense. And also, you have to understand that from the studio perspective, this was a show that was low budget, that came from a studio that people looked at as a little, you know, weird little failure of a studio run by fanboys, and it turned into this massive hit. So this generated this attitude among a lot of the creators that, well, if they can do it, we can certainly do it. And you saw more and more and more and more anime.
Which is part of the problem.
Well, at any rate, I mean, you're right in that, I guess you can say it ultimately peaked 10 years ago. I agree with the notion that I don't really think it dropped off that much. It's kind of like Ninja Turtles. It's been around forever. It never really goes away, and it has a resurgence every couple of years.
Yeah, yeah, Ninja Turtles are still popular. But, I mean, I remember when they first like hit television and there were toys, and that was an unbelievable fever pitch. That was like every person, boy or girl, got Ninja Turtles for Christmas.
Yeah, now it's just not something most people think about most of the time.
Yeah, just like the Power Rangers.
But it's still a money-making franchise. There's new shows every year. There's new toys every year. I mean, it never really goes away, like Evangelion, which is having a renaissance right now because of the new movies.
Just remember, when I was working at Electronics Boutique, there was this new girl we had who was really hot, and I was like so happy because she was into Evangelion, total newbie, and she hadn't yet seen End of Eva. So I gave her the fan sub and went off to my first anime con. Then when I came back, I asked, so where's what's her name? And my boss goes, oh, she won't be back. She tried to hurt herself.
Okay.
As the effect of that film. Out of curiosity, answer me this, Justin. Is Evangelion TV out of print right now?
I think it is. I really think you're right.
I think it's out of print too, but the thing is, it's not exactly hard to find.
No. Well, of course, nothing's hard to find in this internet age, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, think of where we are right now.
I think everyone still has stock because ADV pumped out so many releases of it.
Oh, yeah, you can still buy it online. But, I mean, you'd never be able to go into a brick-and-mortar store and purchase Evangelion.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not entirely sure you can special order that anymore. The movies are certainly out of print, the original ones.
Oh, those are really hard to find, and they look like ass. I really feel bad.
Yeah, I know.
Those
aren't very good DVDs at all.
I mean, the Fry's Electronics near me has plenty of copies of Evangelion, including the Christmas re-release.
God, that was such BS.
So...
You mean the one that cost $20 more than the Platinum Thin Pack that just looked much better from a product standpoint in every way?
Yes, indeed. But I've mentioned the Fry's Anime Graveyard near me many times.
But they're wearing Santa hats.
Malibu Stacy's got a new hat.
All right. Okay, we should wrap up, guys. That was great. Thanks a lot for coming on and being on the show. I really appreciate having you guys here to go about all of this and, you know, use your superpowers for good in the future. Okay, that's our show. I want to thank Mike and Daryl for joining us this week. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. And as always, we'll see you next week.